If you've been told to pull up your socks recently, then make sure it's a pair of RCR socks. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Up Your Brave show with Natalie Cutler-Welsh here on Reality Check Radio. And today we're going to get a reality check all about parenting. I'm going to be talking to Smadar Zmirin on the topic of raising twins with peace and joy. Welcome to the show, Smadar.
Thank you for having me, Natalie. It's great to be here.
Well, some of my listeners know, and some of them don't, that I used to be a parenting author back in the day. I used to be a parenting podcaster. I did over 200 episodes back in the day when my kids were little. Now they're teenagers. I never had twins. I used to want twins, but I'm very interested, as I think many of my listeners will be, on the topic of twins. If you don't know Smadar, I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. Smadar Zmirin is a twin specialist with 15 years experience of working with twins. She is a twin-oriented early childhood educator, a twin-focused sleep consultant and doula. She works with families from pregnancy through to 5 years old and helps parents to raise twins with peace and joy by guiding them to emphasize each twin's individuality and celebrate their twinship at the same time. That sounds like a fascinating balance. Thank you so much for joining us, Smadar. I'm so excited to get into the nitty-gritty of that. But before we do, how did you get started? How did you become a twin specialist?
Well, I think it all started with my first twin nanny job. I was quite daunted, actually, when the parents approached me with their six-month-old twin babies, asking me to come in for an interview. And I thought, okay, let's just go see what happens. And I was 21 at the time, and I fell in love immediately. And it wasn't just the actual job itself that I love working with kids. It was the importance I realized my role had in their lives. So the parents were very adamant for me seeing the twins as two different people, avoiding addressing them plural terms, and really help them just be two different people rather than a set or two halves of a whole. And for me, that was a game changer. I never thought of twins like that. I always like to compare them and to see them as like, one is like this and the other one is like that. And they're kind of complementing each other. And I thought, wow, that's quite neat. And then I started reading a bit more and realized it's also super important. And diving further in, I realized the implications of what happens when you do employ this mindset and what happens when you don't. And the moment I finished working with them after 6 months, I picked up my next job, the twin nanny. And I kept doing that for many years with different ages, different families back in Israel and also here in New Zealand. And in the last few years, I also started studying extensively early childhood education, sleep consultancy, postpartum support, and just trying to really enrich my tools so I can really offer a comprehensive service for twin families.
Over the years of all the families that you've helped, do you see a pattern? Do you see that the parents of twins come up against, I guess, the same challenges or similar, you know, opportunities for learning because they have twins?
It varies. I find that for some of them, because I'm very open in the interview of what I do and how I do it and why is it important to consider this philosophy or this mindset. And for the most part, they are open to it. And the way I introduce it is non-threatening. It's more about, let me show you a different approach or have you considered this and that. And I found for some of them, it's more challenging than others, but they're all quite keen to learn or to listen to me. So I wouldn't correct them necessarily if they say a sentence different to me, but I will paraphrase it or I will really emphasize the way I will approach them or the way I describe the day that this child is this and this child is that. And if there's any comparison that arises from this, I'm really trying to emphasize that this is one and this is two, and it's not in relation to one another. It just happens to be like that today. And it changes. If we let this happen, we can see that these kind of behaviors fluctuate and it's not a label for life. If you thought your child is X and the other child is Y, maybe right now, but actually it can vary if we want to see it. If we are set on how things are from the get-go, That's usually how we end up seeing things.
Is that extra important, the concept of seeing them as unique individual people? Is that extra important if they are, I can't remember which one's called fraternal and, you know, the ones that look the same, identical.
Yes.
If they're identical twins, so they literally look really, really, really much the same, is it extra important then to make note of their unique differences and not so much compare?
Yes. I mean, for me, I feel like it's important with any set of twins. But what happens and what I found in the literature of the twin studies and twin experts sharing their work is that identical twins do have more expectations, especially from the family, for the parents to be the same, to like the same things, to want the same things, to do things together. Like their sameness is ever more accentuated. And I think that's where the differentiating is really important, because actually you can have fraternal twins who look very, very similar. And it's not until you do a DNA test that you realize they are not. And sometimes when parents know they are identical, or they know they are not identical, they behave differently, or they expect different things from them. So if the parents like to dress them up the same, whether they're fraternal or identical, same sex or not, it has its implications later on. It's kind of communicating to society what to look for. Am I looking for differences? Am I looking for similarities? So it starts at home. And that's why I like to work with the parents to help society address their twins differently. Because society likes to compare. They like to compartmentalize. They like to label. And if they know that the family brings it differently, they want their twins to be addressed differently, they take a moment to consider that too.
It must be easier. My son's got twin friends, and they're a boy and a girl. And I always forget that his friend Jacob has a twin sister. Like, I don't think of him as a twin because I only really know the boy. But I guess it's not as common when they're different genders to compare them so closely. What other guidance can you share with us on the topic, which is today called Raising Twins with Peace and Joy? If someone's listening and they are the parent of a twin, or maybe they're the grandparent of a twin, what are some words of wisdom and some guidance you can share today?
For me, what I found over the years that really helps the parents, or the family for that matter, is, first of all, if you can find time for one-on-one, it's absolute magic. I mean, the experience going down the street with one child or two is night and day. And I experienced that myself whenever I had one-on-one time with one twin and the parent would take the other one. Like, it's all of a sudden there's no attention. And you can really just be. And I found that it really helps each parent get to know the child more intimately, and the child gets to know each parent a bit better. So first of all, it helps you realize their personalities, their likes, their dislikes, their hobbies, their habits for that matter, because it's not viewed in relation to another. And they don't have to compromise what they want to do at the moment. They can just do whatever they want with you. And one-on-one doesn't have to be a full hour. It can even just be mindfully having a moment with your child if you're very, very busy, whether it's reading a book, whether it's going for a walk, having a bath, just you and the baby or you and the toddler. So that on its own really, really helps. And it also helps reduce twin rivalry, because the twins don't have to constantly fight for attention. If they know they are going to get their 100% attention at some point during the day, they save up for that. And they don't care as much if you're right now spending time with their non-twin sibling or with their twin. So that's one of them. The other thing that I found is to let twins have things of their own. So twins share a lot, whether they like it or not. They share a birthday, they share usually a room, they share their parents, they share their family. And for the most part, they are sharing all of their toys and clothes. And it's important to help your children learn how to share. But children can't actually share until they are 3 or 4 years old, like understanding what sharing means. Up until then, it's us teaching them, demonstrating, this is what we do, this is nice, this is kind. And with twins, what I like to do is actually encourage parents to let them know it's okay not to share, to let them have something of their own, to not let go right now. And when a child learns what ownership feels like, they come to the sharing experience less tense, less upset, and less frustrated. They can let go when they know they have to, they get to have something of their own, whether it's not having the same toy or just having something that right now they are not expected to share. So reduce expectations of sharing, especially in the beginning. And I think the other thing for me will be, I mean, I know we talked about labeling, but also there is a tendency, and I know it's coming from this social justice we all have, to keep things fair and equal all the time. And my favorite twin expert, John A. Friedman, Dr. John A. Friedman, wrote in her beautiful book, Emotionally Healthy Twins, that life isn't fair and twins aren't equal. So she is herself a twin and she has twins. And she's talking about the notion that when we're constantly trying to maintain the status quo of fair and equal, it raises a lot of anxiety and stress for parents because one got a hug, the other one has to have a hug. The other one got a lolly, the other one has to get a lolly. But if we're changing the perspective to giving each child what they need versus the same, first of all, we are able to see the child in front of us, but also we're reducing the anxiety around, okay, everything has to be the same all the time. This sameness has to be maintained. Otherwise, the twinship is in danger or something like that. So I found that those three keys, key components of not sharing so much, one-on-one time, seeing them as individuals and not trying to maintain things fair and equal, really help reduce stress and help the twins find their themselves, for that matter, in the family, in the twinship, and they're not getting swallowed by the twinship identity.
It's so fascinating, and it's such a unique experience, or it must be, to be a twin. If you're listening and you are a twin, we would love to hear from you. We would love some of your retrospective, reflective thoughts, maybe on your own childhood, what you appreciated, what you wish maybe things could have been like, or some of these amazing tips that Smadar is sharing with us today about the pressure that parents feel to maintain the sameness. We would love to hear from you. You can send us a text, 2057 on the text, or email inbox@realitycheck.radio. If you'd love to share your views, maybe you are a twin or maybe you have twins. We would love to hear some of your thoughts. You mentioned a term earlier. You talked about the non-twin sibling. And yes, that is quite an interesting role. You know, that is quite an interesting situation as well for the, if there is a third or maybe a fourth child, but they're not the twin and they might get more attention or less attention probably. What are some guidance that you have for parents around navigating, making sure that that non-twin sibling still feels valued and loved?
Well, I think it works on two accounts. One, the one-on-one time that I mentioned with the twins. So that goes for any child. If you have one child, if you have 15 children, trying to find one-on-one time can be challenging, yet it is so important. And every family does their best. And I feel like if you can find those little moments in the day to still maintain the relationship with your eldest child or the youngest, whether they came before or after twins, that's super important. And also letting them develop a personal relationship with each twin. So the one-on-one goes for the adults, but also when twins kind of feel like they have to socialize together all the time, that does kind of enhance the importance of them being twins versus two different people. So I think when the singleton, which we are calling anyone who is not a twin or part of multiples, when the singleton children get to experience these relationships with the parents and with the each twin on their own, that kind of twinship entity crumbles a little bit and you can see through it and you can see each child. So the magic of twinship subsides a little. And I think also, again, when the parents starting to see the twins, which I don't love the term, but for lack of a better term, the twins, as two different people, and they're letting them pursue their interests and their hobbies, and they're leading separate lives, the non-twins, the singleton, can see themselves in that. It's not just we're going down the street and there's the twins and there's me. Mm-hmm. It's me and my sister and my brother, or my two brothers or two sisters. So the attitudes that the parents employ around the twinship are something that the rest of the family picks up on. The grandparents, the uncles, the aunties, and their other children. And if they feel like twinship is important, twins are important, and they are more interesting than themselves, mm-hmm. they will internalize it. If the parents reduce the emphasis of twinship and just, okay, we have two kids at the same age, then the singleton children can feel slightly less threatened, I guess, by what they might be lacking, because being a twin is great, but it's not everything. It's not more special than being me.
Similarly, if you're listening to this and you are that singleton, we would love to hear your experience and how that went for you. It's so fascinating. I'm thinking of a few twins that I've known over the years. And I remember when my kids were at primary, there were some twin boys and they were always in the same class. And then it got to whatever year it was, let's just say year 4 or 5 or something. And the parents asked, you know, we're ready for them to be separated and in different classes. This is at a school where there were multiple classes in the same year. What are your thoughts on that in terms of making that decision to, if the school is large enough, to have them intentionally in different classes? I imagine it's individual, but what are some of your guidance on that?
It is individual. Unfortunately, some schools do have a strict policy of twins never being in the same class. And no. I found that rather unfortunate, because I understand it's coming from the idea of empowering them and breaking those, I suppose, maybe codependence links. But I do feel like it needs to be case by case. And for some twins who have been fostering their individuality and independence, starting school in different classes probably won't be an issue. Mm. And for some of them, I find that starting together just for the beginning, maybe year 0, year 1, and then branching out works better. I think it does need to match the parents' expectations and the parents' desires. And sometimes one twin is very ready to be on their own, while the other isn't. And that's where I find that those independent moments, those one-on-one, those fostering individualities are so important, because you wouldn't want to hold anyone back, or you wouldn't want to throw anyone out of their comfort zone unnecessarily. And it's important for each of them to know it's okay to go and thrive without feeling guilty about your twin. And guilt is something that twins and twin parents go through a lot, unfortunately. It's part of the reality. So for school, I find that if your twins can benefit from 1 or 2 years together before branching out, go for it. But if there are things you can start preparing right now, if there are 2, 3, or 4, like one-on-one time, like starting to break through the twinship entity and letting them thrive on their own, pursue their interests and their friendship, then that school transition probably won't be so daunting.
Sounds like it's a fine balance between respecting that twinship, as you call it, and also appreciating them. I think the phrase you used was, treating them fair and equal. And I often, with my kids who are not twins, and I have 3, I always used to try to treat them, and I still do, equal, but not the same. And so even the reward system, the motivation that I use, the feedback that I give them, even the physical affection, you know, love languages, personality types, right? I try to treat them equal, but not the same. What are your thoughts on that, on, I guess, around love languages or personality types? Do you integrate that into some of the mentoring work that you do to help parents see the twins for who they are? Is that part of it?
Yes, 100%. And it takes different forms, because it might not be with the reward chart, it might be just, you know, they're having a tantrum, they're having a hard moment, and one of them would love to be cuddled. That's how they calm down and co-regulate. The other one really needs space, mm-hmm. and you just need to sit with them. And that's something I also see the other twin observing, like they would like to offer a cuddle, but their twin really is interested right now. So it's reading the room and reading what the child wants. And sometimes the parents have the best intentions. They want to comfort their child, but the way they want to do it isn't the way the child actually wants to be comforted. So there is that, of course. And also just the idea that, for me, I will take it to the next level. So let's say one of the kids fell and hurt their knee, and you want to comfort them and then offer them a treat if that's something that you do. And then the twin who, you know, didn't fall and didn't, you know, endure an injury expects the same. So those are the moments where I'm talking about giving each what they need and communicating the other child that your brother is getting this right now because they're having a hard time, and it's going to help them. And helping the twin that is just observing this and feeling like there's this injustice happening in front mm-hmm. of their eyes, that it's okay, you're not always going to get the same, you're not the same person. If you will need something later on, you will get that. So that it happens so many times throughout the day. So the more you do it, the more they learn to expect that. Versus if you always give them the same thing all the time. But the moment you can't offer two of the same, all hell breaks loose. So that's one of the reasons I like to help parents avoid if everything is fair and equal, because life doesn't work like that. And reality isn't going to reward this. And they need to learn those somewhat difficult lessons that we can't have two of everything. If one gets one, it doesn't mean you're going to get it. And which means if you're going to win a race, your twin doesn't need to expect to win a race too. You have different attributes, different qualities, and you're going to lead different lives. And it's okay to be happy with something that is happening for you, or getting a special treat because you need it right now, without feeling guilty or shame that something is not happening to your twin. And when the parents employ this with all of these interactions, it helps them reduce the stress that their child is going to have a tantrum because they can't offer them the same treat, the same cuddle, the same special moment.
I imagine some parents listening will be having a bit of a shoulder drop moment. So not some, maybe an aha moment, but maybe a shoulder drop, which to me means a bit of relief. Like, oh, good. Okay. I don't really have to try to keep it even Steven, you know, equal all the time because it's exhausting, right? So just even that tip alone is so beneficial. And so thank you so much. I imagine every family with twins would want to have you come to their house and help them. Tell me a little bit about the doula, because in the introduction, when I was reading a little bit about your bio, it mentioned that you were a twin doula. For those people that don't know what that is, can you explain what that is, and how has that experience been for you and for other families?
Yeah, so doula has three main avenues, I suppose. There's birth doula, there's postpartum doula, and there's end of life doula. Doula on its own, I suppose, it's a misleading term, because it's derived from Greek, and it actually means breastfeeding support.
Right.
But Western society kind of changed this into kind of those three main roles. So for my postpartum doula, it means that I usually come to the family if I can beforehand and just understand their needs, understand their family dynamic and what they can or want to out of their postpartum experience. And every family is different. If you have external support, if you have more children, that might reduce or elevate stress in the house. So my focus is on the mom, but because I've been working with twins for so many years, and the youngest were 2 weeks old, the youngest job I had, I incorporate all of that experience plus my sleep consultancy training to help bring some peace and joy to your postpartum as a twin mom. So the reason my tagline is raising twins with peace and joy is because peace and joy is what we feel when we have a burst of oxytocin. And there are different ways to boost your oxytocin. And my sole job as a twin doula is to find strategies to enhance the mother's oxytocin boosting. So I want to find ways to help you relax, which sounds kind of impossible, thinking you have newborn twins at home. Because it's two of everything, sometimes 18 of everything, depends on how many things you need to do during the day. And I want to come in and help with hands-on support for the twins, but also allowing the mom to check out for a moment or two and have a shower, have something to eat, go out, have a massage, have a nap, just take a breather. Even if it means to just sit and have your cup of tea in peace, and I will take care of the kids, I will go settle them to sleep, I will take them for a walk, I will help you with the feeding, whatever you might need help with. So for me, it's making sure that your postpartum isn't feeling like you are drowning, which unfortunately is a term I've heard a lot of times from, I call them newborn twin mothers, because it can feel overwhelming on its own to just have newborn twins. It's another thing when birth didn't go as planned, a lot of them are recovering from a C-section, a lot of them are coming home after extended stay at NICU, or one twin stayed at NICU while the other was discharged. And it can be quite hard to assume this motherhood position. And there are some disappointments, there are some expectations that we can address together. And just holding space for all of that, letting you, I don't know, bounce ideas, ask for advice, set some plans in motion, contact a lactation consultant, find a way to increase your peace and joy during postpartum is something that I feel can happen. And it looks different for every family, but I wouldn't want to, every time people come across my company, my business, and they see the tagline, they are looking a bit puzzled, raising twist, peace and joy. Yeah, right. Like, no, but it's possible. It doesn't have to be a chaotic roller coaster ride. It can be wonderful. It can be probably exciting and exhausting at the same time. But there is so much to get out of it if you have the right tool, the right support, the right guidance.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, that phrase they say, happy wife, happy life. It's like supporting the mother, and then that in turn supports the dad and the whole family. But I remember, you know, as a mom with young children, for me, a lot of it was trust, meaning very much when they're little, but when they start moving, like crawling, and you have to rubberneck, right? You're always like, where are they? I know where they are. There's the stairs, like safety, safety, safety. But for a mother with two babies, like twins, to trust somebody else, you know, so that she can even calm her mind enough to maybe have a nap. I mean, it's tough to trust someone else to be on their game, to be able to look after two at the same time. So I can really see how having someone that knows how to, you know, manage twins is such a benefit. I mean, my heart goes out to all the, you know, I got to say, all the mothers and fathers of twins, like good, like kudos to you. I know that nobody can understand unless they've been there with twins. My grandmother's sister had twins. So that's why I thought I was in the lineup. I thought it skips a generation. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have twins. And I was so excited for my first baby. I was like, oh, I'm going to have twins. And I didn't. Second baby, oh, I'm going to have twins. Then I didn't. Third baby, I was like, okay, no twins. I don't want the twins anymore. I didn't want four. But yeah, my heart and my appreciation goes out to all the parents of twins out there. Let's talk a bit about sleep. You mentioned about that you also do sleep consulting. So I guess I would love some guidance, even if people don't have twins, but maybe specifically if they do, what are some tips or some strategies that you can share with us around that sleep side of things?
Well, it's a very big topic.
I know.
But I guess, the main things I focus on, because I do consider myself a twin-focused sleep consultant because I had to settle so many twins to sleep on my own. But obviously in my training, I train with singleton families too. It's part of it because at the same time, every baby is different. And sometimes obviously they're on the same schedule because they're in the same age, but they might have different needs. For me, the main focus whenever I come in contact with a new family is age-appropriate wake windows, because wake windows do extend as the babies grow. So just awareness of how long should your baby be aware of or awake for, because if you're trying to settle an under-tired baby, it might not be so successful, or they're going to wake up too quickly. If you're trying to settle to sleep an over-tired baby, that's going to take either too long, or it's going to be successful because they're going to pass out, but then they're going to wake up too early. So awareness of the wake windows can really, really support your settling efforts, and age-appropriate settling methods. So there is so much information and misinformation out there about sleep, and sleep consultants do get a bad rap sometimes. And in my opinion, it's not entirely based on real research or real evidence. It might just be a trend. And if sleep consultation isn't your thing, that's okay. I do want to stress out that for some families, it's a valid choice. And just like formula used to be, you know, passed down with judgment, and now it's very neutral, it's okay if that's your choice. And there are different settling methods that can suit different parenting styles. It's not all cried out or attachment parenting. There is so much in between. So for me, it's finding the right method for the baby's age and temperament, because your baby's temperament might mean that you need more hands-on support or less hands-on support. Understanding the parenting style and dynamic. For some parents with the first baby, they have all the time in the world to offer hands-on support, and then come along twins or the third baby, and everything needs to look very different. So understanding the family's needs, and also understanding why are they doing it. Are they doing it because they're being pressured? Are they doing it because they need to go back to work next week? Are they doing it because they are tired and they think there might be a different way to do this? So all of those have to be addressed, because if you're not ready, then it's not probably not going to work very well. Or if you're doing it because you're pressured, probably not going to work. So understanding the family's goals, it's really important. And everybody needs to sleep. Every adult knows what it feels like to be sleep deprived. And sometimes it's hard for us to understand that babies don't like to be awake for so long, or they don't like to be awake all night. Even if you want to comfort them all night long, they probably do want to sleep. And sometimes they just don't know how to do that. And support doesn't necessarily mean hands-on support. It can be physical support. It can be emotional support. It can be just your presence. And also respecting their need to sleep. It's a biological need, just like food and water. Mm-hmm. And sometimes learning to settle to sleep takes longer for some babies. But how to fall asleep is something, as Magda Gerber wisely said, is a skill every baby learns on their own. Like, nobody can make another person go to sleep.
Well, I'm sure those of us that are parents are reflecting on our own experiences with each of our children. I find it so fascinating looking back, because my youngest, who's definitely my most stubborn child, it's like, yeah, that makes total sense, the way that he would not go to sleep. And it was the most stressful thing. Whereas my middle guy, he was like, okay, whatever. he's kind of still got that energy today. My daughter slept a long time, like most of the day she was just sleeping. I was like, what? This parenting thing is easy. Yeah. So it's such a fascinating journey. But I think that's the thing, is getting some help with the sleep, and even learning someone like you or another sleep expert that knows how to even interpret the different cries or the body language of a baby. When you're a new parent and you're exhausted, you just don't know what to do. And so I think asking for help, receiving that help is so, so important. All right, before we wrap things up, I'm going to go and ask you the final questions in a moment, but any other final tips for peace and joy or sleep with twins?
Yes, I think for parents of twins, whether you've been doing it for 5 years or whether you're just about to start next week because you're about to have your twins, for me, it's just knowing that there is support, there is guidance, there is information out there. Find out what's important to you and just get out there and research. Find the information that might help your family, because maybe your friend had twins last year and they did it in one way. And for you, you think it's going to be super easy, or, you know, everything is, I'm just going to copy her. It worked for her. It's going to work for me. But every family is a bit different, and every twin parent would look slightly different. So for me, for the twin parents, I always tell them, just do your best, no more, no less. And your best will look different from moment to moment. So the shame, the guilt, the frustration, it's probably all going to still be there. But if you're kind to yourself and you know where you can get more support, ask for it, look for it. And you might not need it today. You might need it tomorrow, but you don't have to do it on your own. And the way you do it might look different, and it's still okay.
Well, I think that's absolutely some beautiful words. Well, I'm going to go to this question next. Actually, my question is, what is coming up and how can people connect with you? If people do want help, they want to have a twin full life, they want to raise their twins with peace and joy, what kind of support do you offer? Is it in person only? Do you do some things online? And how can people follow you maybe for some tips or get in touch if they want some help?
Yes. So my main four services are prenatal support. So that's usually with the expectant parents of twins to reduce anxiety, to address logistical challenges, but also preparing the parents mentally and emotionally for what's going to come. Not so much the birth, but just the twin parenthood, the sheer logistics of it can be quite daunting for some. So just managing expectations and setting them up for success. I offer postpartum support, which is the only services that is available only at your home. And I'm based in Auckland, so that's only in Auckland, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. The rest of the services can be and are provided online. Sleep consultation at home or online as well, from newborns all the way up to 4 or 5 years old. And I do offer parental guidance, and that is usually for the toddlers. I find that's where most families needing support when the toddlerhood kicks in, especially for twins.
Yes.
it can be quite a ride. So my experience in early child education and bringing the RAI philosophy, which we didn't touch today, but it is all on my website, and the resources for infants educators philosophy, which I incorporate into my practice. That's something that I usually address with kids and more so with twin toddlers. And all this information is available on my website at www.twinforlife.com. And I am actually preparing right now another seminar, which is Twin Toddler Behavior Seminar. And details on that are going to be posted on my website or on my Instagram account, which is twinfor_life. So all of that is going to be, it's still already posted there, and you can go and sign up right now.
Amazing. I'm excited. I mean, that's the thing. On my show, the Up Your Brave show, I do a whole range of topics, parenting, kids, you know, families. It's something very close to my heart. So thank you for sharing some wisdom. I'm really just here. We're here, right? To empower families, and having twins is a different experience than having just one at a time. If you were to truly up your brave in the remaining months of 2024, what would you do?
Okay, so at the moment, I am training to become an infant massage instructor. So I am planning, once I'm completing my training, to offer some twin massage, infant massage courses for twin parents, and either at home or in a hall. I'm looking at different options to make it easier for twin parents. And I'm currently working on my first book of raising twins with peace and joy and putting together a twin antenatal class, which hopefully will all be available online for twin families all across New Zealand.
You are a busy lady. This all sounds absolutely amazing. I'm sure you'll have a lot of people getting in touch with you. That sounds incredible and very helpful. All right, before we go, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I want twin families to know that you don't have to do it alone. There is so much support for you, whether it's with Twin for Life or your local twin club. And I do want twin families to get the support they deserve and need, because it does look a little bit different. And raising twins with peace and joy can sound like an impossible task, but every twin family can get more peace and joy, the right guidance and the right support.
So true. Thank you so much, Smadar, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Natalie.
And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057, that's 2057, or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.